coast to coast and worldwide on the internet. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Fascinating story out of Iraq, torn apart by years of war and sanctions, remains so rich in hidden ancient wonders that a leading expert believes the world's archaeology books will have to be rewritten over the next decade as security improves to allow evacuation around some areas. Evidence may emerge that advanced societies existed in areas much earlier than previously thought. Now listen to that. Evidence exists that advanced societies existed in an area there much earlier than previously thought. That, according to Dr. John Russell, a professor of archaeology at the Massachusetts College of Art in Boston. He says, we have no idea just how advanced these societies might have been. Of course, you know, Zechariah Sitchin writes about the Sumerian texts, and that's exactly where Iraq was. So who knows how accurate that statement might be, advanced societies. In a moment, we're going to talk about some ancient mysteries, secret societies, astrotheology with my guest, Jordan Maxwell. Jordan Maxwell is a preeminent researcher, independent scholar in the field of occult religious philosophy. He served for 3.5 years as the religion editor of Truth Seeker magazine, which is America's oldest free thought journal. His work on the subject of secret societies, both ancient and modern, and their symbols, has fascinated audiences around the world for decades. He has conducted dozens of seminars, hosted his own radio talk shows, appeared on more than 600 radio shows, and written, produced, and appeared in numerous television shows and documentaries. Much of his work is devoted to understanding ancient religions and their influence on world affairs. Today, I had an opportunity to meet Jordan about a month ago at the LA Life Expo conference here in Los Angeles, and we hit it off, and I said, Jordan, send me a little more material about what you do, and he gave me his website, and you know what? Fascinating work. So he's our guest tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Hi, Jordan. How are you?
Well, hello there, George.
Always a pleasure.
Delighted to be with you tonight.
You have an extensive background in ancient mysteries and work. How did you get interested in this?
You know, I don't even know. I just, as a child, I gravitated toward the, for lack of a better term, the dark side of the world. I always realized and felt in myself that there is a whole world of knowledge out there for me, but I just didn't know where to go to look for it because I just didn't buy, you know, what I see. I know there's more to life than what meets the eye. And so that's what really got me started as a child. And I grew up happily in a home where my parents, especially my mother, continued to promote me to read books and study and question everything. And I suppose it's just in my blood.
The dark side. That happened to me in terms of not necessarily the dark side, but a family that really pushed me into reading books about the unknown and to go ahead and start doing my own homework and start investigating on my own. And at the age of 11, 12, 13 years old, I started doing that. I think that helped my journalistic background.
Oh, without a doubt. You know, I started asking questions when I was like, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old, and the adults would look at me like I was a fool. But a classic example of a child's question, when I was being confirmed in the Catholic Church about 9, 10 years old, whatever it was, and we were told that the bishop would possibly ask the children after the service was over if they had any questions, and that we were told not to ask any questions, period. Well, that night after the services were finished, the bishop did ask, are there any questions from the children? And I stood up, scared to death, of course, because I knew I wasn't supposed to. And I asked the bishop, I said, my father works with torches. I mean, he's a welder. Could I take a torch and burn an angel? Would it hurt him if there was an angel here and I hit him with the torch? And nobody said anything for a few moments, and then he said, well, of course not. And I said, why not? And he said, well, because you can't burn an angel. I mean, fire is a natural thing. It takes a wood or paper or something to burn, but you can't burn an angel. And I said, why can't you burn an angel? And he said, well, because angels are spirits and you can't burn a spirit. So I said, why am I worried about going to hell when my spirit will burn if you can't burn a spirit? And it was quiet all over the church, and I knew from that moment on, there's more to the story than meets the eye on everything.
Absolutely. What a great question for an 8 or 9 year old to ask.
Well, oh, I'm just looking at the words and putting the words together, and that's what I've been doing all my life.
You know, when you talk about your interest in the dark side, explain what that means.
Yes, I do not mean that I am interested in the dark side to learn from it. I am interested to learn about it, meaning that there is always more to the story, as I said, than meets the eye on everything. And a classic example, if you're going to build on a foundation, say on a second floor, and you're going to put a lot of weight, like printing presses or whatever, the smart thing to do before you go starting to build on that foundation is to go downstairs, get on a ladder, and go through the ceiling tiles and look at the foundation of the floor. Look at the beams to see if the floor is going to hold that kind of weight. So what you're doing now is you are standing under the foundation to get understanding, because that's where the word understand comes from, to go under the foundation to see what it's really based on.
Good point, Jordan. A few years ago in Kansas City, Missouri, at the Hyatt, they had a collapse of a corridor.
Oh, yeah.
And because it just had too many people standing on it. And I would guess their architectural studies, they did not factor in a total amount of people that would be able to walk there on any given time.
That's
and
right.
It collapsed. And it's exactly what you say. If you don't build that foundation first, the whole thing collapses.
That's exactly right. I mean, if you're going to ship a package, for instance, a big package, and you go out in the garage and you find some rope and you tie the package up, well, the rope is probably going to be fine for the shipping. But if you're going to take that same rope and hang it off of a 10-story building and put your life on it and you're going to hang on it, now you better check the integrity of that rope. You better find out if it's going to hold you, because
as long as your neck's not around it, right?
Right. Because your decisions in life are only as good as your information. And this is what has bothered me from as far back as I can remember, that there are always two kinds of facts, the kind you look up and the kind you make up. And too many people get in trouble. Then their lives are filled with trouble because they just haven't done their homework. They have been told by other people, and this is something I really don't like, is when other people, the word is project, when other people project on you what it is that they want you to believe, that is absolutely destructive to any person's development. You never know. You might have a small child who's a genius, who's questioning everything and might do something very big in life, but if you continue to put the child down and tell him not to ask questions. I mean, who was it? It was the I'm trying to remember his name. One of the scientists said that when he was a child, he used to ask the teacher, "Why is it we children have to answer your questions, but you don't have to answer ours?" You know. So my point being,
he was a smart aleck scientist.
Yeah.
Huh?
But you know, always keep in mind. I like this one quote I heard many years ago. It says, always trust a person looking for the truth. Don't ever trust the one who's found it. The point being is that there is so much more to life than what we know, so many more facts that we're not privy to know. And even when you've got everything nailed down and all in a line, and then you find out 10 years later that all the facts were wrong, and now you start all over again, because this is a continuing process on the earth. And this whole point that you brought up, this story that you brought up at the start of the hour about the finding
the Iraqi findings, yes.
Yeah, that's one incredible story. There's a lot to that that a lot of people don't know. we can talk about that later.
Absolutely. Of course, one of the big stories over the last week or so in terms of box office appeal, Jordan, Mel Gibson's The Passion of the Christ. I haven't seen the movie yet. I like to wait a few weeks, let things die down, and then go and see it myself, and I'll make up my own mind.
Yeah, me too.
But without getting involved with you now in the historical reference to what may or may not have happened, I am particularly interested in the man and his powers that he may or may not have had. Did you ever look into that?
Well, yes, but there's just an awful lot of area that we don't know for sure, because we're trusting church officials to pass down to us the history, and we know all corporations lie on their paper. So we never know what for sure took place, but there is some valid research has been done in the first century, and I hesitate to talk about the movie also because I haven't seen it either.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe. Let me say it this way: I have the highest of admiration for the man and his work, Mel Gibson. I have the highest of admiration for him. I do not believe he produced the movie to cause harm.
No,
I believe, and it's just my take on the thing, I believe that he produced it because he felt, as so many of us do, that our culture is racing to superiority in technology, but we're losing our spiritual dynamics in our race. We're losing track of our spirituality, and so this was his way, I believe, of pointing up that there are more important things in the world than just making money and technology.
Do you think we're running against a clock here, Jordan?
I'm totally sure of it.
You
are? Absolutely, yeah. I have no doubt in my mind about that, and it's getting awful late. I don't even know where to start on that, but I do believe that there is a time in which mankind reaches a point of no return, so to speak. I think he's reached it many times in the past, and I don't think ours is the only civilization like us that is highly technical. I'm totally sure that there were. You cannot look at the monolithic structures of the world all over the earth and not know that there were profoundly brilliant people far, far back in time, and unfortunately our religious and political establishment have marginalized all of those things, and it's only until, like myself, you go to Egypt and go into the pyramids and go into the temples do you really begin to appreciate the profoundness of these ancient people and what they were doing.
Why do you think they marginalized this? I mean, what do they have to gain by doing that?
Well, I think that its bottom line is control. And you naturally, if you want to control people, you must control what they know. You don't want to have to run for You don't want to run for mayor in a town filled with profound geniuses and
they don't need you, right?
Superior people. The more you can keep them occupied watching basketball, the better off everybody's going to be. And so I think that the religious system, especially the religious system, and I have nothing against spirituality at all. I'm talking about the corporate religious system that came out of Europe. We're talking about 2,000 years or 1,600 years at least of the church dominating Europe, and the Europe, of course, dominating the world. And there is an agenda which has been outlined thousands of years ago.
Well,
and it's still in operation today.
With this agenda and with the, as you talked about, some of the incredible buildings that were left behind years ago, do you think they were made by societies who developed their own technology, or do you think they had some help from someone up there?
I think they had help from somebody out there. That's just my subjective opinion, but I my gut feeling is, as brilliant as this creature we call man is, and it is an incredible creation, we humans, but I don't think that we have the ability to do all the things that were done. There's no doubt in my mind that we are not alone in the universe, and it's always, George, amazed me to hear scientists and astronomers philosophizing in fields that they are not prepared to talk about, but they talk about the fact that we obviously know that there's life out there, but they could never get here because the distances of space are just too much. I think how absolutely ludicrous that is for an intelligent person to make a statement like that, when the fact is you don't know how far along these people or these entities have progressed. You don't know what their evolution is.
Precisely.
They've been around for hundreds and hundreds of millions of years.
I mean, these scientists are making reference based on the technology they understand today.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
We were told that a man's body could not go that more. What was it, 25 miles an hour back in 1920s?
Mm-hmm.
We were told you couldn't go any more than that. In the night, 25 miles an hour, the human body could not stand. Well, so much for that wisdom. And as I said, things just keep changing. The more we change, the more we stay the same.
You have ufology has also been a part of your entire history now, hasn't it?
Yes, very, very big. I have always been interested. I was born and raised in Pensacola, Florida, and right across the bay from me was Gulf Breeze.
Yeah, oh, that's right.
And I grew up in Pensacola myself, and I don't know why me, but I grew up having all kinds of other world experiences. There's very difficult to try and explain it, but my whole life was filled with strange things happening, seeing strange things that other people didn't see, or having experiences that other people couldn't relate to. And so I am totally sure there is something very legitimate going on in that area of Pensacola.
Did you get going in your career? Did the Barney and Betty Hill case get you going as it did me?
No, I really wasn't very well aware of that one. But my own personal experiences are what got me going. I mean, as a child, I would wake up. I put my bed purposely by my window so I could look up at the moon and the stars at night. and I'd lay there at night looking and thinking about what might be out there in space, and then I'd fall asleep, and I'm talking about 10, 12 years old.
Yeah.
And then I would wake up in the middle of the night, and I would see someone at my window, my head's right there at the window. And they would be there looking at me, and when I'd wake up, I'd see them, but they would move instantly. But I saw them, but they would move, and I quickly, as a kid, you'd move very quick. I pop open the screen, and the yard is lit by the moon. There's no one there.
But you're convinced someone was.
Oh, yeah. I saw them.
Yeah.
So, and then, of course, I had some extraordinary experiences with spirit entities coming into my bedroom. I woke up one night, maybe 9, 10 years old. I woke up one night absolutely screaming my head off. I was totally ballistic. I was crying and yelling. Because I knew that there was an entity in my bedroom, and it was extremely evil, and I knew it. And my mother, of course, screaming at that hour in the morning, 2 in the morning, everyone in the neighborhood was hearing it. And my dad and mom kept trying to come into my room, but I was screaming and jumping up and down the bed crying, "Don't come in the room. He's here."
You were trying to protect them?
I was trying to protect them, and that's all I remember, is I wanted to protect them from the entity that was in my room. And it finally went through the wall, and I felt him. I didn't see anything, but I felt the entity leave the room, and I knew where he left. I pointed to the wall. I said, "He's just left." And then I fell on the bed, and I was totally exhausted. So I've had these kind of experiences quite literally all of my life. So I am totally, positively sure that we are more than what we think we are. There's more to the human race than what meets the eye.
No question about it. Let's talk about that boogeyman that you probably saw when we come right back, Jordan, because when you talk about the dark side, that's part of it, and I'd like to get more of your take on that and many other things that we'll talk about right here on Coast to Coast AM.
Oops. Subscribe to the After Dark newsletter and reserve your free CD of Art Bell and the late Father Malachi Martin. 888-727-5505. Out there, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
And our guest tonight is Jordan Maxwell. His website is jordanmaxwell.com, linked up with coasttocoastam.com. After Dark newsletter, the clock is ticking. The days are getting fewer and fewer and fewer. For the free CD, Art Bell's interview with the late Father Malachi Martin, this one on exorcisms, you get it for free when you subscribe to the After Dark newsletter. A couple ways to do that. Calling toll-free will do it, 1-888-727-5505. The other way is coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Jordan Maxwell, our guest tonight. Jordan, do you believe that that entity when you were a child was the boogeyman that so many children have reported seeing?
Well, I wouldn't be a bit surprised. This was not, my experience was not with something that was a scary boogeyman. This was a very, very frightening experience.
This was worse than that, then?
It was far worse than that. I was totally ballistic. I was screaming my head off, and I was frightened to death. I could not see what the entity looked like, but it was there. And a child that age does not go totally off the charts that bad for no reason. And when it left, I felt it go out of the room. And so as far as I'm, and I, that was, as I said, that was not the only experience, but that was one I will never forget. And we talked a little bit about the UFO.
Yeah.
2 points I would like to make. First of all, I'll preface that by saying that I've done a lot of radio over the years myself. I've had my own radio show and been interviewed by many people. But you are an excellent host. I am very happy to be on the show and talking with you because it's such a pleasure to talk with you.
Oh, thanks.
And in relation to the UFO, I've been asked if you believe in UFOs. No, I don't believe in UFOs. I don't have to. I know they're here. And I have to tell you a quick story that happened to Ivy West, who you know.
Yes.
And myself and Paul Tice, who you'll have to know.
All right.
Later. I was, this was back in 92, back in 1992, I was going to be the best man at my friend's wedding up in Palmdale, which is about 60 miles north of me. And I went up there to spend the day with him, and as everyone was getting ready for the wedding, his wife-to-be went out with her mother and girlfriends to the market, and they came back, and there was an old man following them in the car, and he got out and followed them up to the house. And we wondered, who is this? And he came up, and the girl said to me, she said, we met this man in the market, and he said he needs to talk to the best man at my wedding. And she said, how do you know I'm getting married? He said, I just need to talk to the best man. And so she let him follow her home because he was an old man and didn't look very
suspicious,
dangerous.
Suspicious, yeah.
And so I said, well, okay, talk to me. And he said, I've been told to tell you that you're going to be in a car and you're going to be driving the car yourself. And there's going to be a lady in the front seat and a man in the back seat. And you're going to be way out in the desert and you're going to have a tremendous UFO confrontation. But it will not happen for at least a year and a half. It's going to be a year and a half from now. And I said, well, sometimes my friend and I go up to, to the desert at night looking to see what we might see. And he said, no, this is going to be way out in the desert, and it's going to be east of California, and they are going to pick the time for you to see them. And so he said, but remember, a year and a half from now, and you'll be driving. Well, a year and a half from then, I was speaking at a conference, a UFO conference over in Mesquite, Nevada. And on the way back on Sunday, I had Ivy in the front seat and Paul in the back seat. And we were talking, and I said, have you ever been up to Area 51? Well, no, none of us had. So we turned around and decided to go up. And we get up there, and we're sitting and talking with Joe and Pat Travis, the lovely people who own the Little Alien up in Rachel, Nevada.
Yes.
And so we're sitting up there, and then when they're closing that night, about 11 o'clock, 11:30, I said, Joe, where do we go to see UFOs? And he said, go out in the parking lot, they'll find you. And so Pat says, well, if you want to go where all the tourists go, you go out on the highway and go back south toward Las Vegas, toward Vegas, back south, and go exactly 20 miles. And you'll see a big mailbox there. That's the famous black mailbox. And just sit there and wait and see what will happen. So we got in the car, and as we're driving out, Ivy's in the front seat, Paul's in the back, I'm driving. I got onto the highway and turned left, going north. Ivy didn't catch it, I didn't, or Paul. We went 20 miles north of Alien rather than south, and when we got to the 20-mile mark, we slowed down, put on the bright lights, looking for a mailbox, couldn't find one. So we decided to turn around and go back to the Alien.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as we stopped the car, right where we stopped the car, there was a road leading off out into the desert, a well-kept level road. And Ivy and Paul said, let's go out in the desert. And I said, well, you're out in the desert. You don't have to go any further.
Yeah, I don't want to go any further.
I don't want to go any further into the desert. And it was totally overcast, from sea to sea, totally overcast. Couldn't see a thing. And they wouldn't stop. They said, let's go out. So I did. We drove out a couple, three blocks, and then all of a sudden I felt very strongly that we have done something wrong. I knew that we were in a wrong place at the wrong time. I backed the car up to turn it around, and I said, Ivy, I'm getting out of here. I'm scared. There's something wrong, and I don't know what it is, but I'm trusting my gut feeling. And Ivy and Paul jumped on me and said, look it, park the car. We get out for a couple of minutes. So I said, all right, but I don't feel good about this. They said, park the car. Get out for a couple of minutes. So I did. We could not have been out of the car more than 1 minute when the clouds just north of us, and remember, it's very dark on the desert at that hour, like about 1:30 in the morning, when it's totally overcast, no light, period. And just north of us, the cloud began to open up, a hole in the cloud, and two beautiful bluish-white glowing disc-shaped things came floating in, not zipping by, but slowly floating through the hole coming. And as they came through the opening of the clouds, they leveled off so that their light reflected off of the clouds above them. And each one of them appeared about the size that the moon appears, a full moon
mm-hmm.
appears in the sky. So they were not little dots of light. These were beautiful, about the size of the moon, gorgeous, glowing blue and white disc. As we were shocked when we saw these two discs come through, five more followed them. Now there were seven bluish-white discs hovering above us, making no sound whatsoever, and scaring me to death. Ivy and Paul are jumping around like they've seen Santa Claus for the first time. They loved it. I was scared because I knew I had never seen anything like this. I'm from Pensacola. I know what the Naval Air Station has.
Exactly.
I know all the top-of-the-line stuff. But this was not anything I have ever seen. And I was legitimately frightened. And I told Ivy, I said, we're getting out of here, Ivy. I don't know what this means. I don't know who they are, and I'm scared. I want to get out of here. And so Ivy and Paul jumped in the car because they knew I was serious. They rolled the window down. I put my foot to the floor, flipped on the lights, and took off. When I did, immediately Ivy and Paul went totally ballistic, now themselves screaming at each other, and now they're scared big time.
What are they scared about?
And I kept screaming at Ivy because I am frightened. Ivy is now screaming, a woman screaming in your ear while you're driving fast. It's an extraordinary adventure. And so
been there, done that.
Yeah. And I screamed at Ivy. I yelled at her. I said, Ivy, shut up. I'm trying to get out of here. And she's screaming. And so I stopped the car quickly and threw open the door. And those seven disc-shaped things were now down on us.
Oh,
they
my
were
God.
Huge. And they were zipping around the car. They were doing extraordinary things of coming together in a circle, blowing out into a seven-pointed star, coming back into a circle, blowing back out into a seven-pointed star, doing all kinds of extraordinary stuff. And they weren't hurting us. They were frightening me. And now they've got the attention of Paul and Ivy, and they're scared. We got back out on the highway, and we stood there, and all the emotions started pouring out. There were tears. There were laughing. It was beautiful. It was frightening. It was this and that. We went back to the motel, and for about an hour, you can imagine, the conversation was, what in the world did we see tonight? Made no sound whatsoever and did things that we have never seen any craft do. And later the next morning, I got up, and Ivy and Paul were over at the little alien having breakfast, and I went over, and I saw a bunch of people sitting around the table listening to Ivy and Paul. And I thought they were talking about what, you know, they were telling the people what happened to us last night. No, they were telling the people what happened to them in the bedroom last night that I slept through. And Paul and Ivy were visited, or they let me sleep through it, obviously. But Paul was visited in the bedroom at Little Alien, and so was Ivy. One of these days you'll have to ask Ivy to tell you the story. It was an extraordinary story.
That's and how does that tie in then to the old man who sent you on that merry way a year and a half before that?
I know. He told me I would be in a desert, way out in the desert. He told me that there would be a woman and a man. And incidentally, he told me, and I asked him why specific, and he said there has to be a woman and a man. Because it needs to be two witnesses to what you're going to see, because the event is not for them, it is for you, but they want a man and a woman to be a witness to what you're going to see. And there's a lot more to that story, because it continued on once we got back to Los Angeles and I went back to San Diego, and that's even an incredible follow-up on the story we'll talk about another time. But nonetheless, I'm telling you this because I have personally seen some extraordinary and beautiful things that we refer to as UFOs. They made no sound whatsoever. They were right down over our car. They moved with a precision that I have never seen anything move with. They would stop, change places, and just stop and lock themselves in the air and not move, then zip, zip, and moving around again. Man, what an experience.
Jordan, as you think about it now, do you think you had anything to worry about?
Well, no, because well, part of the experience is I went back out there, and I parked, it was a whole story, and I don't want to go into it, but I realized that if they meant us harm, we wouldn't even
you wouldn't be
talking
here.
About it.
Exactly.
So I know that it was some kind of a contact. And obviously, the man a year and a half before had been given that to tell me. And
what a sight.
Yeah.
What a sight.
What an experience.
Too bad you didn't have the old camera and video camera with you.
I know. But you know what? I don't think those things would happen
if you had,
because I think they're a lot smarter than that.
I think they tap into your mind.
No doubt in my mind about that. Yeah. And I think that they know, they decide a lot of things. They will decide where they will meet you. They will decide what you will be doing and what you will have with you and what, you know, we got to assume that these beings, whoever they are far, far superior to our intellect. I mean, they're like giants and brilliant people looking at children at play.
Have you theorized why here, Jordan?
Say it again?
Have you theorized why they're here?
Yeah, I've got my feelings about it, but it's just a subjective theory. But I think that there's a very good possibility that they have always been here, that this is their Earth. We probably are someone's experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And they have always been here, but they are far, far cleverer. I mean, it's, we do the same thing. You can have an ant colony on your desk in your office and just sitting and watching the ants living their little lives and never realizing, looking through the glass, that there's a whole world out there watching you.
Dropping a little food every once in a while.
That's it. So I'm convinced from my own self that we not only have been visited, but we are living simultaneously with entities from other places, and I am totally sure of that.
How has that affected then, Jordan, the perception of various religions since the beginning of time?
Oh yes, that's the subject I love, because once you get into the occult or hidden, and let me clarify, the word occult is a Latin word simply meaning hidden, and so much is hidden. And once you begin to see the paintings from the Middle Ages and the temples and all of the ancient paintings, you begin to see UFOs and flying saucers everywhere. And we're told there's nothing in Judaism or Christianity that in any way would conflict with the idea of extraterrestrials. We talk about angels. The Bible, both in the Old Testament and the New Testament, talk about sons of God. Well, the sons of God are totally different than angels. Doesn't mean the same thing at all.
That's
and then
true.
There are, in the Old Testament, there's another entity called the Watchers. Well, this is in the Bible. This is Judaism of the Bible. This is Christianity talking about angels.
And what's so fascinating, Jordan, is almost every culture talks about extraterrestrials in their own little way.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. If you'll remember, Abraham, we're told in Genesis 18 that Abraham is sitting by his tent and three men come walking up, and he goes out and bows down, prostrates himself before them and bows down before them and says, "What is my Lord saying to his servant?" And they said that they were on their way to somewhere else. And he said, and the scripture in Genesis 18 says that Abraham begged them to stay for dinner, and he had Sarah fix dinner for them. They sat and ate, and then the two of them got up and said they had to go on the business, but the third one stayed for a little while to talk with Abraham. And the scripture says in the Bible, Genesis 18, that this was the Almighty God, the Creator himself, and he sat with Abraham, had lunch, thanked him, got up, and then left. Now in Genesis 19, the two men that he had entertained, we now find them in Sodom and Gomorrah, and now they're being called angels. And they go into Sodom and Gomorrah, they have supernatural powers, they cause blindness. Interesting, too.
Sounds like radiation, doesn't it?
Well, something, they had some kind of technology. And what's interesting is that the homosexuals thought they were good-looking men. Now, the sons of God, as we know, where is it in Genesis 6, where it said the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were fair, and they took them all as wives? Well, the point being is that I can understand handsome, good-looking men talking women into the bed, but I cannot see some hideous sun creature from another world dazzling the females. So they must have been good-looking men. Well, this is what the Bible says in Genesis 1:28. It says that God created man in his own image,
mm-hmm.
after his own likeness.
Now, let's assume we're coming up to the top of the hour, so we'll have to continue this. But, but let me ask you this. How many civilizations might be out there that are part of the same?
Yeah, goodness. I've heard there's over 50 from government people who were in a position to know, and they've told me it's well over 50. different ones that they know about. And there have been a lot of other good researchers who are talking about the same thing. But that's the ones we know about. It's at least possible. And also this whole subject of the reptilian. That's another subject that I'm very interested in.
I want to talk with you about that and in this reported 50 other extraterrestrials right. out there. And I know you can't give me your full sources there, but I want to find out what governments do know indeed about this whole thing. So we'll be right back with you as we approach the top of the hour. Jordan Maxwell, investigative reporter, my guest. I'm George Norrie. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
Free CD of Art Bell and Malachi Martin when you subscribe to After Dark. Call toll-free 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505.